I wish I had a friend named Frond. This is my friend, Frond. This is Frond, my friend. Uh-oh, I said that out loud, too. Now that man is really looking at me. He thinks I'm crazy. The gall of that man to think I'm crazy for talking out loud. I'm not crazy. I'm sure he's had the same kind of thoughts. I bet he wishes he had a friend named Frond. I'm just going to smile at him. Nope, shouldn't have done that. I think I have some brownies stuck on my front tooth. Now he thinks I'm really crazy for talking out loud and missing a front tooth. It's not like talking out loud and missing a tooth makes you crazy. There are a lot of things that make you crazy. Like pushing around a shopping cart all day. I don't want to label people, but usually someone who is not completely balanced has a shopping cart. Actually, that's a smart idea. I should get a shopping cart. What a great invention that is. I don't carry a purse. I usually put everything I need in my pockets. But it might be fun to push a shopping cart around. I put so much stuff in there. People would be like, "Did you just come from the grocery store?" And I'd be like, "No, you fool. This is my purse on wheels." That's what I'd call it, a purse on wheels, or POW. No, I would not. I guess I don't want to call it that. I don't want people thinking I'm pushing around a prisoner of war. But maybe if I'd add an exclamation mark like, "Pow!" People would pronounce it like, "Wow," but "Pow." I don't know. I guess it would be hard to get it in my car anyway, my purse on wheels. Oh, well. Hola! That's how you say hello in Spanish. I knew it would come to me. See, I am not crazy, sir. Okay, that just came out loud. That was just a... okay. Chapter 16. Family. We are family. I got all my sisters with me. We are family. Get up, everybody, and sing. Sister Sledge. A few years ago, I received a letter from a genealogist at the New England Historic Genealogical Society. At first, I thought it was a letter from my lady doctor, but then someone told me genealogy means family. They wanted to know if I was interested in learning about my lineage. Up until that point in my life, I hadn't really thought about my family history. All I knew for sure was that I was born in Metairie, Louisiana, and I came out of my mama's belly button. But as soon as I received the letter, I started thinking about my past and my ancestors. Who am I? Where am I from? Why do I love hummus so much? So I asked the genealogist to do some research for me, and they found out some very interesting facts. They told me I'm related to a whole bunch of celebrities, and not just in the Kevin Bacon sort of way. I mean, actually related to. First of all, I found out I'm married to Portia de Rossi, which is amazing. She's beautiful and one of the nicest people I've ever met. Also, I found out that I'm 10th cousins, once removed from the Academy Award-winning actress Halle Berry. That's a pretty obvious one. Look at us. We're like twins. People are probably always passing her on the street yelling, "Ellen, dance!" I am also a distant cousin of Richard Gere, so now there are two reasons we can't date. I am 8th cousins, 9 times removed from George Washington, which explains why I cannot tell a lie and I love to wear powdered wigs. And most important of all, I'm royalty. I am 15th cousins with the future Queen of England, Kate Middleton, which makes it a lot less weird that I have everyone who works for me call me Your Royal Highness. Actually, I found out that my ancestors date all the way back to 15th century England. That's like when Big Ben was just a tiny little baby Ben. I have relatives with names like Jean Laurent DeGeneres and Jean Baptiste DeGeneres, which are really fun to say. And I'm a descendant of William Brewster, who came over in the Mayflower. I assume that's why I'm so attracted to a shoe with a buckle. It's exciting to find out what your roots are. Knowing where we came from explains so much about who we are. Plus, it gives us so many more people to borrow money from. What's interesting when you really think about where we all come from and how different our past might be is that if you were to peer into the window of any house on any street during a big family holiday celebration, you would most likely see many of the same scenes. You would also risk getting arrested for trespassing, but still you would see that all of our families are very much the same. No matter where we come from or to whom we're related or how our past have impacted our current lives, every family gathering tends to go the same way. First, you hope that your favorite aunt invites you to her house for the holidays because she has the finished basement with a nice pool table. She's not going to. Instead, everyone is going to go to your uncle's who has 4 pit bulls and an indoor skate ramp made out of recycled beer bottles. As soon as you get there, you get stuck talking to your brother-in-law's brother. You have nothing to talk about, so you start with, "Wow, I haven't seen you since you were on Cops." Immediately, your mom grabs you and says, "You weren't supposed to mention Cops. Why did you mention Cops?" Then you apologize for mentioning Cops. Somehow, in the apology, you make a joke like, "Well, at least you weren't on To Catch a Predator, right?" Another apology is made. Then Cousin Pam shows up with her famous corn casserole that is famous for all the wrong reasons. You know, the first thing that she's going to want to do is play the guitar and sing about peace, so you decide to go outside for some fresh air, even though it's 4 degrees and snowing, and you forgot to pack a coat. 2 seconds later, 9 kids follow you outside to pelt you with snowballs, and when you don't throw any back at them, they start calling you names and make you feel bad that your skin turns red in the cold. It's not your fault. You've always had sensitive skin, and there's nothing wrong with being sensitive. You tell the kids that, but it doesn't go well at all, so you head back inside and ask if there's anything you can do to help because you're polite, and because your mom is giving you that, you better ask if you can help. I didn't raise you to just stand there and do nothing look. You hope the answer will be no, but your aunt says, sure, I haven't made the sweet potato pie yet. You can do that. Then you panic, because you don't know the difference between a sweet potato and a yam, and both are on the counter. And if you start making a yam pie, you'll never hear the end of it. So you start making a yam pie. Luckily, the people are distracted by a dozen grown men screaming in the living room because little Timmy unplugged the TV just as a football team was scoring a touchdown. Timmy starts to cry. The dogs start to bark. Everyone finally sits down to eat. The wine will start flowing, and so will the secrets. Guess what? Mom's pregnant. Guess what else? So is Dad. He can do that now. You scarf down your meal and head home wondering if everyone's family is that crazy. The answer is a resounding yes. But we should be grateful for them, because without our family, the ancestors we descend from, the cousins we see once a year, the loves of our lives we see every day, life is pretty boring. You don't have to believe me, but you should. I'm royalty. Chapter 17. What would Jesus do? I don't know if you've read a magazine lately or gone online or watched TV or visited a mall. I don't know what you do in your spare time, and frankly, it isn't any of my business. But if you have done any of those things, you've probably been asked to participate in an opinion poll. Opinion polls have become incredibly popular. People love them. I know because I read that in an opinion poll. Lately, it seems that every magazine has a poll. Every tabloid has a poll. Every internet site. Every bedroom in my house. That's a different kind of poll, but I'm just sharing it with you. And I have to say, I'm not sure that all these polls are totally necessary. A lot of them ask the same questions. Which couple is cuter? Do you like her dress? Do you like his shirt? Who wore it better? Are they too skinny, too fat, too pretty, too ugly, too tall, too short, too hairy? Not hairy enough. Many of them ask questions that not only seem unnecessary, but to use a technical term, are also bonkers. I won't say the name of the magazine. It sounds like pen style. I stole from my dentist's office, but there was a poll in it that asked readers, how far would you take this season's hot shade of green? 39% of the people said all the way. 37% said halfway, and 24% said just a hint. Now, here's my first question. What? How far will you take this season's hot shade of green? What does that mean? What does that mean, take green all the way? Like to the prom? Are you going to settle down and have children with the color green? And look how close it is between all the way and halfway. There's only a 2% difference. I'm surprised we didn't hear about that on the evening news. I read another poll in a different magazine that I cannot and will not name, even if you beg me to. Sounds a lot like Clamor. It asked readers, hot pink dress. Is it a do or a don't? Now here's my question about this poll. Who cares? If you want to wear a pink dress, wear a pink dress. It doesn't matter what other people think. 100% of the people polled could say a pink dress is a do, and guess what? I still ain't wearing one. I've been in these magazines, and it's always an awkward thing to open up one and see yourself compared to a bunch of random people. It's like, who wore it better, Ellen or Heidi Klum? And obviously, when you put the two of us side by side, it's just not fair to Heidi. They go after everyone on those polls. I actually think if Jesus were alive today, there would be polls about him in Us Weekly. Who wore this flowy gown better, Jesus or J-Lo? Jesus's sandals, hot to trot, or heavens no. Do you think Jesus should cut his hair? 54% of the readers say yes, Jesus should cut his hair. And of course, that would be followed up by, should Jesus cut his hair into a mullet or a buzz cut? All these polls do is make everyone so judgmental, and I don't believe in judgment, unless it's judgment of judgment. I don't think someone has to wear something better, or have a better hairstyle. That's why the word different exists in our language. I don't know why the word mustache exists, though. Can't we just call it lip hair? We all spend so much time comparing ourselves to each other. Everyone is running around trying to keep up with the Joneses. Who are the Joneses anyway? Why are we trying to keep up with them? I'm sure they're not perfect. We don't need to keep up with them. It's hard enough keeping up with the Kardashians. And people compare everything. It's not just clothing. It's who has a bigger house, who drives a faster car, who has a better job. People compare their bodies to other people. And not only that, they compare what's on their bodies. Have you ever gotten a bruise or a scratch or a paper cut and shown someone else what happened? People immediately start stripping off their clothing to compare injuries. I once went into work and showed some producers a little bruise I got. The next thing I knew, it was like girls gone wild in my office. People were lifting up their shirts, rolling up their pants, socks were coming off. You think that's bad? I walked into a tree yesterday. I banged my hip on a car door. I sat on a fork. I don't need to see it. People were showing me scars and beauty marks that were not at all beautiful. I'm going to tell you all right now, even if your beauty mark is in the shape of a prize ribbon, I don't need to see it. Same goes with stretch marks, ladies. When you say, look what my kids did to me, I expect to see gum in your hair, not your whole midsection. And no, I will not rub cocoa butter on it. Anyway, all I'm saying is I don't see the sense in comparing ourselves to other people all the time. It's not about being better than anyone else or having nicer things or bigger fork marks on your behind. I personally like being unique. I like being my own person with my own style and my own opinions and my own toothbrush. I think it's so much better to stand out in some way and set yourself apart from the masses. It would be so boring to look out into the world and see hundreds of people who look and think exactly like me. If I wanted that, I could just sit in front of a mirror and admire my own reflection all day. That's already how I spend my mornings. I don't need to spend all of my time doing that. And who's to say what's better or worse anyway? Who's to even say what's normal or average? We're all different people and we're all allowed to be different from one another. If someone ever says you're weird, say thank you and then curtsy. No, don't curtsy. That might be too weird. Bow and tip your imaginary hat. That'll show them. Chapter 18. Random things that might help you but probably won't. Never make your bed with a monkey in it. Leaning forward in your chair when someone is trying to squeeze behind you isn't enough. You also have to move your chair. There's no attractive way to get a cherry pit out of your mouth. When making a right turn onto a busy street, always check the crosswalk for children's imaginary friends. Everyone looks better in fuchsia. If you have portraits of yourself up all over your house, people are going to think you're conceited. Replace them with portraits of me. When moving heavy objects, I know they say to lift with your knees. I've always found it easier to lift with my arms. Restrooms are not for resting. When your eye twitches, it means your body wants you to wink rapidly at whoever is sitting across from you. If you like winning, never play hide-and-seek with a chipmunk. Answering every question with, "You got a girlfriend," can apparently be irritating to others. Kerfuffle is an actual word. At a four-way stop sign, the person with the prettiest eyes has the right of way. Chapter 19. Common courtesy. I am never late. In fact, I'm usually early. This is partly because I believe in respecting other people's time and partly because I forgot to turn my watch back after I went to Europe one summer. In a recent highly scientific study I conducted among friends, family, and cable repairmen, I discovered one thing to be true. Most people are always late. I don't know when it became socially acceptable to be late. I imagine it started with the person who coined the phrase fashionably late. What a terrible expression that is. I don't know who came up with it, but it was obviously someone smart enough to trick people into thinking that something is stylish when it is definitely not stylish. I'm assuming it was the same person who invented culottes. I remember one time Portia and I invited a couple over to dinner, and they showed up 2 hours late. You heard me. 2 hours. 120 minutes. 7,200 seconds late. We told them to come at 7 and they got there at 9. By the time they showed up, we ran out of firewood for the fireplace, our candles had melted down completely, and I was capital D-runk, drunk. To be fair, I was drunk at 4:30, but that is not the point I'm making. If someone invites me to a dinner party and they say to be there at 7, I'll show up at noon. And if they're not ready for me, I'll use that time to go through their medicine cabinets. I would never be late because it throws off the whole plan for the evening. Everyone schedules dinner parties the same way. You call it for 7, you expect people to trickle in between 7 and 7:15. There's about 18 to 20 minutes of small talk, some appetizers, and by 7:45 it's time to eat. You eat for about an hour, drink a magnum or two of Chablis, have a heated discussion about politics and or the quality of the Look Who's Talking sequel as compared to the original, and by 9 o'clock you're yawning so people know it's time to find their coats. When people don't show up until 9, everything gets pushed back far too late. By the time we were ready for dessert, I was ready for bed, literally. I had put on my night guard and I had taken all my clothes off. I understand that sometimes people are going to be late. I can deal with someone being 10 minutes late or 15 minutes late, but once you hit an hour, you better have a really good excuse, like you gave birth to a baby in your car. And if you're going to be more than an hour late, you better show up with a litter. What I've realized is that people don't care about common courtesy anymore. How many times have you held a door open for someone who walks right through it without saying thank you? How many times have you let someone into your lane of traffic without receiving the courtesy wave? I mean, who among us hasn't picked up a drifter only to be disappointed after they steal all the money out of your wallet when you thought they were looking for gum? We've all been there. And not only are people rude, they have no boundaries anymore. I was in a public ladies' room recently because the portalette that's usually part of my motorcade was in for repairs, and the person in the stall next to me was talking on her cell phone. In the stall. In public. Not a care in the world. On the one hand, I was happy for her because I found out her son made the honor roll and her husband got a promotion at work. On the other hand, I didn't need to know that her rash turned out to be nothing more than bicycle chafing. When I was growing up, you couldn't take your phone anywhere because it was tethered to the wall in the kitchen. If you were on the phone, you were only on the phone because there was nothing else you could do except maybe flip through an old cookbook or rifle through a junk drawer full of pennies. You couldn't even bend down to tie your shoe or you'd get choked by 6 feet of phone cord. Now that we can take our phones practically anywhere, everyone is completely distracted when they're supposed to be having a personal conversation. Have you ever been talking to someone and you can tell they're not paying attention to what you're saying at all? They pretend they are because every few seconds they say, uh-huh, uh-huh, oh really? That's so neat. And you're like, how is it neat that I have the flu? It's crazy to me that people don't realize we can hear what's going on in the background of wherever they are. I know you're watching television because I can hear Anderson Cooper and I know he's not your roommate. I know you're in the grocery store because I can hear that grapes are on sale. I know you're at the gym because someone is telling you to feel the burn. At least I hope you're at the gym. Everyone tries to multitask now and do 12 different things at once. I once saw a woman talking on the phone, putting on makeup, reading a newspaper, texting, twittering, all at the same time. I went right over to her and I said, hey, you need to focus right now. You are my therapist. I guess what I'm saying is that politeness seems to be lacking in our society nowadays. In the 1950s, people were much more polite. They used to say, good day, ma'am. Good day, sir. Good day, mate. I might be thinking of the Australian outback, but still, people were polite. Wally and the Beeve were never late for dinner. After Lassie rescued Timmy from the well, Timmy sent Lassie a handwritten thank you note and a gift certificate to Denny's. And one of the biggest songs of the decade was called Don't Be Cruel. Another one was Bebopalooa. I don't know if that has anything to do with the politeness, I just thought you might want to know that. I'm not saying we should return to those times entirely. I mean, most ladies wore girdles, and I don't think we need to revisit that situation. I'm just saying we can all work on our manners. We can say please and thank you. We can be punctual. We can just be nicer to one another. It's something we have in our power to do. It reminds me of that Margaret Mead quote, "Never doubt that a small group of thoughtful, committed citizens can change the world. Indeed, it's the only thing that ever has." That's either Margaret Mead or it was my horoscope in last month's issue of Yarn Today. My point is, be nice and be on time. Please. Thank you. Chapter 20. Sauna. One of the best things you can do for your mind and body is sweat. That's why I usually wear undergarments made out of thick memory foam. It's also why I'm in a sauna right now. It's going to help me relax, rid my body of toxins, and clear my mind. Out with the old and in with the new. It's very hot in here. I know I'm supposed to be sweating, but I don't know if I'm supposed to be sweating this much. There are little puddles of moisture collecting in the sleeves of my robe. I should probably take off my robe, but I'm just not that comfortable being naked around strangers. Unfortunately, the same cannot be said for most of the women at the spa today. It's like a nudist colony in here. I've never been to a nudist colony, but I imagine this is what they're like. A lot of naked people bending and stretching like they're preparing for a race. Now my eyes are burning. Not because of the naked people. Well, a little bit because of the naked people. But mostly because of the heat. It must be like 500 degrees in here. One time when I was a kid, I stuck my head inside of an oven because I wanted to get a tan. This is so much hotter than that. This feels more like the surface of the sun or the inside of a jalapeno popper. Saunas are supposed to be great for your skin. That's what my facialist assistant's assistant told me. And I just learned on Jeopardy that the skin is the largest organ in the human body. At first, when Alex Trebek said, "This is the largest organ in the human body," I screamed out, "Leg!" Obviously, I was just kidding. Well, I wasn't kidding, but everyone laughed at me as soon as I said it, so I pretended I was kidding. Sometimes I do that when I say something wrong and everyone laughs like I'm making a joke. They're always like, "Oh, Ellen, you're so funny." And I'm like, "Yep, got you again, you sillies." And then I try to change the subject to Matt Lauer or something. You know, I might be sitting too close to the heater. My eyelashes are sweating. I'm sure if I get some water, I'll be okay. I love the cucumber water that spas have. It's so refreshing. It's like a little spa for your mouth. It's funny how cucumber water can taste so much better than pickle juice, even though it's from the same exact source. I love pickles, don't get me wrong. It's just that after a massage, I'd much prefer the lighter taste of cucumber water to the saltier taste of pickle juice. Whereas after a long day at the office, I might kick back in front of the TV and enjoy a large glass of pickle juice. I don't know what I'm saying anymore. I would have never had a glass of pickle juice. That's a lie. I think I'm delirious from the heat. The good news is, if I pass out, at least I'm wearing a robe with a spandex bodysuit underneath it with a t-shirt and shorts over that. The bad news... Chapter 21. Pros and cons. By a show of hands, who has a hard time making decisions? You know what, I just realized I can't see you. This is an audiobook. I wish I could see you. Well, not all of you. I don't know where you are or under what circumstances you're listening to this. If you're sitting on a beach in a beautiful park, maybe somewhere in Colorado in the middle of summer, then I'd love to be able to see you. Colorado is beautiful in the summer. Or if you're sitting next to a fireplace, next to a big window overlooking a snowy field, maybe somewhere in Colorado in the middle of winter, I'd also love to be able to see you. Colorado is beautiful in the winter. I'd love to be able to see some of you even if you're not in Colorado. It's just that a lot of people listen to audiobooks while they're in a bathtub, and if that's the case, then I do not wish to see you. Unless you're in Colorado and it's fall and you have a breathtaking view of a lush forest from your bathtub, then perhaps. But because I can't see you, I have to assume that a lot of you have a hard time making decisions. Sometimes I have a hard time making decisions, and I like to think that I have a lot in common with my listeners. Who else considers a glass of wine a serving of fruit? Me too. Throughout my career, I've had to make a lot of very big decisions, many of which have had huge impacts on my life. The material I decided to do for my first appearance on The Tonight Show with Johnny Carson led to Johnny calling me over, which literally changed everything for me. My decision to sport a mullet with bangs and wear hammer pants remained questionable. Whenever I have to make an important decision, I like to make a list of pros and cons. That way I can see all the positives and negatives right there in front of me, and I can decide what will work best for me. I don't know if you like to make pros and cons lists, but I wanted to show you how helpful they can be. I've gone ahead and made a list of pros and cons of making a list of pros and cons. Look it over, and then you can decide for yourself if a list is right for you. Pros. Aids you in making well-informed decisions. Cons. Forces you to make well-informed decisions so you can't say stuff like, I don't know why I bought this $10,000 antique spoon. I wasn't thinking. Pros. Helps you feel organized and in control of your life. Cons. Takes away time that could be spent napping or playing video games. Pros. Allows you to put off making an actual decision. Cons. Takes away time from making your actual decision. Pros. You might decide to make your list while you're flying on an airplane next to a very attractive person. You'll take out a piece of paper and realize you need a pen. You'll ask him or her if he or she has a writing utensil, sparking a conversation about how you've both been to Paris in springtime. You'll fall in love, get married, and live happily ever after in a mansion made out of clouds. Cons. You might decide to make your list while you're flying on an airplane next to a very attractive person. You'll take out a piece of paper and rummage through your bag for a pen. Once you find it, you'll exclaim, "Found it!" and you'll reach your arm up, immediately knocking it into the tray table of the attractive person next to you. Their water will go flying through the air, soaking them and you and the flight attendant, who happens to be walking by at the time. Everyone around you will be upset. You have to sit there without moving an inch for the rest of the 6-hour flight, and you won't marry the stranger on the plane, something you've dreamed of doing since you were 6. Pros. Lists are fun. Cons. What was I trying to decide? Chapter 22. Labels. Unfortunately, I get labeled a lot. I'm often labeled as a gay talk show host, or a vegan animal lover, or a dancing superstar, the likes of which this world has never seen before. I remember after I became a cover girl, people started labeling me as just another gorgeous blonde model with a pretty face, and they stopped taking me seriously. And that was hard. That was really hard. The problem with labels is that they lead to stereotypes, and stereotypes lead to generalizations, and generalizations lead to assumptions, and assumptions lead back to the stereotypes. It's a vicious cycle, and after you go around and around a bunch of times, you end up believing that all vegans only eat cabbage and all gay people love musicals. For the record, I find musicals very unrealistic. If I suddenly turned to Portia and burst into a song about how we're out of orange juice, I don't think she'd just immediately join in. I think she'd be confused and concerned for me. Stereotypes obviously come from somewhere. There are similarities among certain groups of people, but it would be dangerous to assume that all stereotypes are accurate. You can't say all New Yorkers are rude or all Californians are hippies. You can't say all blondes are dumb or all white men can't jump. You can't say all rich people are snobs and all celebrities have big egos and are self-centered. That's just not true. But going back to me for a second, I know that there are a lot of stereotypes associated with being gay. However, I didn't realize just how many there are until recently a woman asked me how many cats I have. When I told her I have 3, the first thing she said was, "Oh, you really are a lesbian." At first I thought, well, yes, I really am a lesbian. The secret's out. And then I thought, wait, what? When did that become a stereotype? I thought most people who had a bunch of cats were single and lonely. No, see, that's another stereotype. I was so taken aback by her comment, how does the number of cats you have make you a lesbian? And why is 3 the lesbian number? Would having only 2 cats mean I'm straight? Would having 4 make me super lesbian? I'd like to make it clear for anyone who may think otherwise, I assure you that having cats does not a lesbian make. There are a few other characteristics that define one as a lesbian. When she said that, it reminded me of when I came out. At that time, there were extreme groups that didn't think I was gay enough. Then there were other groups of people who thought I was too gay. It didn't occur to me that when I announced that I was gay, I would have to clarify just how gay I am. What does that matter? What does that mean? All I can say is I am gay enough for me. To me, that's why stereotypes and labels can be so damaging. People make these sweeping generalizations and have preconceived notions of what you're supposed to be and of who you are based on a few tiny little words. I think it's important to actually get to know someone before you make generalizations. And you can do that pretty easily just by talking to them, asking questions, reading their diary. Despite all the labels, in most ways, I'm really not that different from anyone else. I guess if you had to label me, you could say I'm like the girl next door. Well, maybe not next door. I'm like the girl a few doors down. Chapter 23. For the Children, Part 1. One of the things I love most about my talk show is the fact that everyone from babies to great-great-grandparents watches it. My show is fun for all ages, kind of like an amusement park or a strip club that offers daycare. Believe it or not, I have a loyal fan base made up of toddlers. I always assumed it was because they were impressed with my comedic timing and interviewing skills, but it turns out they just like to watch me dance. I love that kids love my show. In fact, I love it so much I want to devote this chapter to them. In the PDF, you'll find pictures of cool things kids love that your son or daughter can color in. It's like a coloring book, only better because it's part of my audiobook. Please feel free to color it in yourself. You know the old saying, you're never too old to play, you're only too old for low-rise jeans. Chapter 24. Talking Hard. There are a few things I didn't realize would happen when I signed on to host my talk show. One, I didn't realize that for the first 3 months of the job, I would have a recurring dream where Maury Povich invites me on his show to tell me that Phil Donahue is my biological father. And two, I didn't realize how much I was going to have to talk. Oh, my heavens, there's a lot of talking. I know the job title is talk show host, but I guess when I first started, I focused more on the host part. I don't know. I picked out nice candles for the guest dressing rooms. I made sure the lighting was just right. I stocked the rooms with champagne and fresh strawberries. I even picked out some soft robes and underwear in case anyone wanted to get more comfortable. Sure, a lot of my guests initially thought I was hitting on them, and that was my mistake. I just didn't realize how much talking it would involve. And my job isn't a job where I can ever take a day off. Believe me, I've tried. The studio's always like, you signed a contract to be here every day, blah, blah, blah. It's a lot of pressure. It turns out if I stop talking, the show comes to a complete stop. It's the same as narrating this audiobook. If I don't speak, nothing happens. You see what I mean? Listen to that. Nothing. Silence. What if I just stop? No, it's not over. I just stopped talking. It's pressure. See, that's what I'm saying. And it's not just the talking. I also have to listen. Ugh. When I ask my guests questions, I don't know how they're going to answer, so I have to really pay attention. In real life, when I ask someone a question, I can nod and pretend like I'm listening, when really all I'm thinking about is how cute it would be if my cat could play the ukulele. If I daydream like that on my show, I'm being rude to Julia Roberts. Don't get me wrong, I love my job, but let me just break down how much talking there is on my show. Every day I start with a monologue. That's all talk with some occasional singing because when you have a voice like mine, you have to share it with the world. Then I sit down and I talk to my DJ. We make small talk. After that, I talk to my audience about what's going on in my life. I love talking to my audience. I really do. Over the past 9 years, I feel like I've developed a relationship with them. It's one where I do most of the talking and we eat all our meals separately, but it works for us. After I talk to the audience, we take a commercial break, and during the break, I talk to my producers. They tell me stuff like, "You look great," or "You were so funny when you said," you know, they'll say something that I said that was really, really funny. There's so many things, I can't think of one specific thing to tell you right now, but there's a lot of funny things that I say, and then they'll come over and say it. Anyway, it's not like they have to say that stuff or anything, but if they do, they get entered into drawings to win fun prizes. And then we come back from commercial, and I talk to my guests. Now, I love talking to my guests. I've had the chance to interview some absolutely incredible people, everyone from actors and musicians to powerful world leaders like the President of the United States and Justin Bieber. But let me be clear, not all of my guests are easy to talk to. Most of them are. Most of them come in with great stories to share and great energy. We have a nice time. We dance with each other. We chat. We do shots. But every once in a while, a guest will come on who isn't the easiest person to have a conversation with. I can't name any names, of course. Well, I can name one, Harry Connick Jr. He is like talking to a wall. It's impossible, and I can't pretend otherwise. Mm-mm, I won't. I refuse. Meeting and talking to my guests is a lot like being at a cocktail party with people you've only met once or twice. When you first see each other, you're not sure if you should shake hands or hug or kiss, so you end up doing that awkward handshake, half-hug, oh my goodness, we almost kissed on the lips because I don't know which way to turn my head combination greeting. I've definitely noticed some patterns over the years in the way certain people tell stories. First of all, you can always tell how interested you're going to be in the story based on how it starts. If it starts with the sentence, "Wait until I tell you about my new shower caddy," I don't need to hear the rest of it. But if it starts with, "I survived 12 years in the jungle on nothing but berries and thistle," I'm in. I've also noticed that when people say, "You are never going to believe this story in a million years," I am almost always able to believe it. And when people say long story short, they either say it after they've already told about 15 minutes of an incredibly long, boring story, or they say it in the middle of what could be a really good story, like, "Well, we woke up and had breakfast out on the deck like we do every morning, and long story short, I am no longer welcome in Mexico." Obviously, it's my job to keep the conversation going and headed in a good, positive, upbeat direction. So I've learned that there are definitely questions to steer clear of to make sure that that happens. If any of you ever decide to host your own talk show, and I encourage you to do so, here are some things you should never ask a guest. Number one, how old are you really? Number two, and where is that tattoo? Number three, and where is that piercing? Number four, what an interesting story that was about your belt. Tell me more. Number five, could we see more pictures of your wife giving birth in the tub? I genuinely do love what I do. I like getting to meet new people every day. I like introducing my audiences to new music and talent. I like helping people. It's not like I'd rather be a mime. I mean, they have to wear far too much makeup. Chapter 25. Additional thank yous. I just remembered some people I forgot to thank in the acknowledgments. Deepak Chopra, my third grade teacher, Mrs. Grady, the New Orleans Saints, my cats, Charlie, George, and Chairman, who are my dogs, Wolf and Mabel, who are my really cool cats, everybody at NASA, Kate Middleton, and the nice man at the supermarket today who let me pay ahead of him because I only had one item. Thank you. Chapter 26. Babies, Animals, and Baby Animals. People are constantly asking Portia and I if we're going to have children. If you're one of the people or persons who want to know the answer to that question, before you stop me on the street or send me an email or hand me back my dry cleaning, I can tell you right now that we are not going to have any children. We thought about it. We love children. We love to be around children after they've been fed and bathed. But we ultimately decided we don't want to have children of our own. There's far too much glass in our house. A few years ago, in an online poll, Portia and I were voted the number one celebrity couple people would trust leaving their kids with. That's very flattering, but before anyone starts dropping their babies off at our house like it's a daycare center, let me tell you how much I know about them. I know which end you feed. I know up from down. I know front from back on the boy ones. And I know that when they're born, they're slimy and make weird goat noises. I might be thinking of a baby goat in that instance. I know everyone says it, and that's because it's true. Parents have the hardest job in the world. I can't think of anyone who has a harder job on the planet, besides maybe whoever glues those tiny little rhinestones onto doll shoes. It's so precise. Portia and I have learned so much about parenting from being around our niece Eva and her mom and dad. It's a challenge even if you have the most precious, adorable, and cutest baby on the planet. I know everyone says that about their own kids, and I'm sure you all think your kids are the cutest kids on the planet. It's sweet that you think that, but the fact of the matter is, Eva is the cutest. We've learned how much patience you need to have and how careful you have to be with what you say and what you do, because from the moment these little creatures are born, their brains are like sponges that absorb every single thing around them. We've also learned how attentive you have to be. If you're not attentive 100% of the time, you will quickly learn how difficult it is to get grape juice out of the antique rug in Auntie Ellen and Auntie Portia's sunroom. Here's why I think every parent out there should be given a medal or a ribbon or a trophy, like those bowling trophies, but instead of a person bowling on top, there would be a little statue of a parent sitting down to watch some mindless TV after scraping dried peas off the sofa while their son or daughter is finally sound asleep in the other room. That might be too much to put on a trophy, but you get the idea. First, you have your baby, which in and of itself is a stunning feat. I won't go into specifics, but ouch and no thank you. Then you spend the next 18 years raising the child. Throughout that time, you ask questions you never before thought to ask another human being, like, who needs to go potty? And can you please take that underwear off your head for mommy? And you got what pierced? Where's that? Once your kids turn 18, you think you've done your job and you can go back to having a clean basement, but it turns out, according to an article I read, 80% of college graduates are moving back home with their parents. 80%. It would probably be 100%, but some parents were smart enough to move without telling anyone. It has to be frustrating for a parent. Your dream is to send your kid to college, be there when they graduate, and watch them go on to do great things. They're not supposed to come back home. Their room has already been turned into a gym. That sort of thing doesn't happen in nature. When a bird leaves its nest, it leaves for good. The mama bird does all sorts of things to get those babies out of that nest for the long haul. First, she'll nudge them to encourage them to get up and move around, and then she'll show them how fun it is to fly. She'll circle the nest, swoop around, play peekaboo, and then she'll fly to another branch and squawk, "Hey, get out! I've got company coming!" And the baby bird leaves. It learns to fly and make its own nest. It doesn't leave, get a bunch of tattoos, and come back to mooch off its mama. It starts looking for its own food and searching Craigslist for temp jobs. I think parents can learn a lot about parenting from nature. Not only can they learn from birds, but they can also learn from the wildebeest. When wildebeests are born, the parents encourage the babies to walk right away. If they don't learn fast enough, they get eaten by a lion. So I guess what I'm saying is, parents, once those kids are out of college, you've done your part. If they come back home after you've spent all that time and money on their education, what you should do is get yourself a lion. Okay, maybe don't get a lion. Maybe just change the locks. Portia and I don't have children. That's why we're always full of energy and smiling. But we do have a lot of animals that we treat like our family. We have two dogs, Mabel and Wolf. We have three cats at home, Charlie, George, and Chairman. We have two cats on our farm, Tom and Little Sister. Two horses, and two mini horses, Hannah and Tricky. We also have two cows, Holy and Madonna. And those are only the animals we let sleep in our bed. We really treat our animals like they're our babies. We don't dress them up or anything, but we do take them to Mommy and Me classes every Friday. You should see the cows play the maracas during music time. If it isn't the most adorable thing you've ever seen. I know having pets isn't exactly the same as having babies. It's not like I have to stay up all night nursing our cats. I mean, I do, but I don't have to. But our animals have taught us valuable lessons that could be applied to parenting human babies should we ever change our minds. Things like, when your baby wants to communicate something, it will moo loudly. And when your baby is hungry, you will need to feed it some hay. Maybe that only applies to cows. But one thing we know for sure is that you should never sneak up on your baby, and when you're feeding it, you should always hold your hand flat. Okay, now I'm thinking of a horse. You know what? We mostly know about animals. We're not going to change our minds.
Chapter 27.
My bucket list. Number 1, buy more buckets. Number 2, travel to distant lands to learn more about different people, cultures, societies, or watch more Discovery Channel. 3, wear more white. 4, learn to fly. 5, build a canoe. 6, tell everyone I know I built a canoe. 7, go see the Philharmonic, concerts, operas, or watch more PBS. 8, call more people rascal. 9, watch someone run a marathon. 10, learn to speak a foreign language like Australian or British.
Chapter 28.
I am not lazy. I am not a lazy person. In fact, I'm a very busy, hardworking person. I host a daily talk show. I have my own production company. I have my own music label. On the weekends, I manage a Kinko's downtown. But every once in a while, I do something very lazy, shockingly lazy. A few months ago, I got home from a long day of entertaining America and many other parts of the world, and I sat on my sofa to watch some television. I realized my favorite cat, Charlie, wasn't with me. She usually finds me as soon as I come home. My other cats are more independent. They spend summers backpacking through Europe and call when they need me to wire money. But Charlie and I had this very, very special relationship, and I wanted to let her know that I was home. Don't worry, I'm not one of those crazy cat ladies. I just like my favorite cat to know I'm home so we can talk, have dinner together, and watch Hoarders. I assume she was in our master bathroom because that's where the cats like to hang out when we're not home. They record most of their cute kitty plays with loofah YouTube videos in there. Now, in order to let her know I was home, I could have walked to the bathroom or yelled for her, which is what I usually do, but for some reason on that day I did something else. We have an intercom where I can push a button and talk to someone in another room. Sometimes it's fun to use when we have company. I'll get on it from a different part of the house and whisper stuff like, "Is there anything you ever wanted to tell God? I'm listening." We have fun. Anyway, so I get on the intercom and I say, "Charlie, I'm home, Charlie," and I hung up and I waited for Charlie to come running. I didn't think anything of it until I looked over and Portia was staring at me. She said, "Did you just intercom the cat?" And I looked at her and I had no choice but to say, "Yes, I did just intercom the cat." In my defense, I was very tired, and if I wanted to walk all the way to the bathroom to find Charlie, I would have had to get on my Segway, ride it to the escalator, take the escalator to the third floor, cross the champagne fountain, get my retina scanned, and deactivate dozens of laser beams. Okay, that's not true. I would have had to walk down the hall. I'm not usually that lazy. Have I ever tried to take my pants off without taking my shoes off first? Yes. I also recently got in my car one morning and noticed a stain on my shirt and then continued to drive to work instead of going all the way inside to change. I'm sure you've all done that at some point. You get dressed in the morning and you're excited about your outfit. Right before you leave the house, you notice a coffee stain right in the middle of your shirt or a little hole right there in the armpit. Of course, that means you put it back in your closet like that after you wore it last time. Oh, that's not that bad. I can wear that again. We're getting lazier and lazier. There's so much technology that helps us be lazy. There are cars that park themselves, which is great not only for lazy people, but for people who also hate not having scratches on their bumpers. There are vacuums that vacuum for us. Thanks to Bud Light Lime, we don't even need to squeeze the lime into our own beer anymore. Humans aren't supposed to be so lazy. We're not supposed to go from work, where we sit for hours and hours in the same chair staring at the same computer screen, to our homes, where we spend hours and hours sitting on our sofas playing video games and watching reality TV. I'll admit, I'm guilty of watching a lot of reality TV. Nothing makes me feel lazier than complaining I can't find the TV remote to change the channel and then eventually finding it so I can watch an episode of I Shouldn't Be Alive about a sailor who had to float on a twig in the middle of an ocean for 2 months after his boat capsized and sank. It wouldn't be so bad to watch all these reality shows if they weren't so time-consuming. They're each 2 hours long. There's a dent in my couch the shape of my entire body, and it got there after I watched a single episode of The Bachelor. I also like to watch American Idol, Survivor, The Celebrity Apprentice. That's like 97 hours of TV to watch every week. That barely leaves any time to focus on what's truly important in life, Facebook and Twitter. I've noticed that there's a show to find the next everything, the next model, the next chef, the next designer, singer, dancer, entrepreneur. Pretty soon there will be a reality show to pick the next president. We won't even have to leave the house to vote. Sorry, sir, during this debate, you did not stuff enough marshmallows into your mouth. You will not be moving on to the primaries. Please bring me your torch. What they should do to save us all some time is combine every show into one giant reality show. Who wouldn't watch a show about the next tap-dancing celebrity bachelor apprentice who can survive in the wilderness while singing about losing weight? Ryan Seacrest would host, and we'd all watch. Let's all challenge ourselves today to get up and move a little more. You know what we should be doing more of? Squatting. Let's all squat more. For every YouTube video you watch, do a squat. For every video game you play, do a lunge. Not at someone. Then squat again. And then thrust. And then lunge again. And then squat. And then thrust.
Chapter 29.
Chapter for the audiobook listeners. I know many of you are listening to an audio version of this book, so I'd like to say a special hello to all of you. Recording an audiobook is a lot like doing the voice of an animated character in a movie. I'm in a recording booth, and I have big headphones on, and I'm talking into a big microphone. And since there are no cameras, I don't have to wear any pants. There's a sound engineer. "Hi, Jerry." I'm waving to him right now. He's sweet. He's waving back. "Hi." Now he's holding up a sign. My name isn't Jerry, it's Mike. Okay, hey, Mike. Anyway, well, since you have the benefit of being able to hear this, I thought I would include some bonus material of me making strange noises. For those of you who are reading this the old-fashioned way and can't hear me, the noises are printed down below, and I encourage you to use your imagination to think of what they might sound like coming out of my mouth. But this is really specially for you, audiobook listeners. Me. Ba. Ko. Good morning. Bow. Ba-bow. Yellow. Kentucky. Pop. 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 Kerplunk. Lemonade. Sylvia. Click. Pa 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 pa. Pew, 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 pew. Shh. Harumph. Chapter 30. Aspirations. A short, short story. I want to be an astronaut when I grow up, said young Delilah. You live in a tiny village outside a small town next to a great big city, said her mother. You will stay here and work on our farm. You will never be an astronaut. Indeed, Delilah worked on the farm for many years and grew old. On her final day in the care of local villagers, she turned and asked, "Was I an astronaut?" And they said, "Yes, you are a great astronaut." And she said, "Really? I was?" And they said, "Shh, no more talking." Chapter 31. Social skills. There's never been a time when people could communicate and express themselves as instantly and as much as they can now. It's hard to believe, but there was a time when communicating meant we had to write letters. If you're listening to this audiobook with your kids as a bedtime story, and I highly suggest you do, now might be a good time to teach them about handwritten letters, record players, VCRs, and the first season of The Hills. Nobody writes letters anymore, which means nobody has pen pals. I remember I was probably about 10 years old. I had a pen pal, and writing letters back and forth to him was one of my favorite things to do. His name was Steve, and he lived in one of those huge mansions that's so big it has a name. It was called the Louisiana State Penitentiary, and he told me it was even bigger than the mayor's mansion. We'd send letters back and forth, and he'd ask me to send him my favorite books and small pieces of metal or wood that were laying around and all the money I could find in my house. And I'd gather them up and put cute little stickers of cats on the packages and send them away. It was so fun. Eventually we stopped writing because I moved to another city and he moved out to live on his own. He called it solitary confinement. I was always so impressed by his vocabulary. I've always liked writing. I like the feeling of having a nice pen in my hand. It feels like I'm creating something when I put pen to paper. Even if it's just a doodle of a flower or a note that says, "If you ever park in my spot again, I will have your ass towed." It's a nice feeling. When you physically write something down, you're forced to take time to actually think about what you're writing. We don't really do that anymore. Now we just press buttons. We can delete things and change things at our leisure. We're so spoiled. Think about what cavemen had to go through when they wanted to write something down. They had to chisel it into stone. It probably took hours just to write, "Dear Grog, going out for bread, be back in 20, Gluck." If they made a mistake, they'd have to go out and find another flat stone and start all over. Who knows if they ever even made it out for bread? I do know they used to club each other over the head a lot, so I'm not saying we should do everything like the cavemen. I'm just saying nobody writes letters anymore. Now everything is electronic and instantaneous. We email, we text, we Facebook, we Twitter, Skype, instant message, iChat, blog, dance interpretively on YouTube. Every person who has a passing thought, opinion, question, or answer can express it immediately on his or her computer, phone, laptop, tablet, or other portable electronic device that will be invented and revolutionize communication in the short window of time between my writing this book and it being published. Way, way back in the day, like in the 1990s, if you wanted to tell everyone you ate waffles for breakfast, you couldn't just go on the internet and tweet it out. There was only one way to do it. You had to go outside and scream at the top of your lungs, "I ate waffles for breakfast." That's why so many people ended up in institutions. They seemed crazy, but when you think about it, they were just ahead of their time. Right the second, someone is probably listening to this audiobook and thinking, I'm thirsty for tequila. I'm guessing that's what they're thinking, because that's what I'm thinking as I narrate this. So that listener is going to take to their Twitter account and tweet, listening to Ellen's hilarious new audiobook, Thirsty for Tequila. And if that makes people want to buy the audiobook, I think that's great. What's not so great is that all this technology is destroying our social skills. Not only have we given up on writing letters to each other, we barely even talk to each other. People have become so accustomed to texting that they're actually startled when the phone rings. It's like we suddenly all have bat phones. If it rings, there must be danger. Now we answer, what happened? Is someone tied up in the old sawmill? No, it's Becky. I just called to say hi. Well, you scared me half to death. You can't just pick up the phone and try to talk to me like that. Don't the tips of your fingers work? It's even more awkward when we're face to face with people. It used to be exciting to make plans with friends because you could just sit and catch up and talk about what's been going on in your lives. And now when you see someone, there's nothing left to say. You've already seen the pictures from their trip to Rio on Facebook. You've read their tweets about their latest diet they're on. And they already texted you about the pregnancy scare. So you end up just sitting and staring at each other until you both start texting other people. Whatever we do say has to be short because our attention spans are now about 9 seconds long. We talk in short bursts. We can only read up to 140 characters at any given time before we're on to the next thing. We don't even have the patience to wait for minute rice. We've moved on to instant rice. Because really, who has time to wait a full 60 seconds for rice? I'll tell you who. Nobody. We have TiVo because we don't have the time or patience to sit through commercials, and we have On Demand because we don't want to just watch movies and TV shows available to us at any given moment. We downright demand it. Just to give you a little example of how patient people used to be, did you know that the opening credits sequence to Mr. Ed back in the early 60s was a solid minute long? I'll give you 30 seconds to pull it up on your iPhone so you can see for yourself. People had no choice but to sit through the whole thing, and they loved it. They paid attention to it. A horse is a horse, of course, and no one can talk to a horse, of course, that is, of course, unless the horse is the famous Mr. Ed. And it keeps going for almost a minute more. Now, the opening theme song to a TV show is a guitar sting. Ba-pow! And we're inside someone's kitchen. Now, granted, there wasn't anything else for people to watch on TV at that time, so they didn't have much of a choice. It was either sit through the theme song or play with a yo-yo. I bet a lot more people read back then. It's so rare now for people to actually set aside time to curl up with a good book and read. I know you're listening to this on audiobook, and I think that's great. A lot of you are probably driving right now, and I wouldn't want you to read while you're driving, especially the way you drive. But when was the last time you actually took the time to curl up with a good book? By the way, I don't know why you have to curl up to read a book, but that's what people say. You can't just say you're going to read a book because someone will ask, well, how are you going to read it? What position will you be in? I'm going to curl up. Oh, good, good. So you're not going to stand. No, I'm going to curl up. Okay, good. Hey, you're not going to lay on your side, are you? No, I promise, I'm just going to curl up. It's an awkward position to be curled up. I like to lay flat or try a lot of different positions. I'm still talking about reading. We don't curl up to do other things. We never say we're going to curl up and surf the internet or curl up and knit. In fact, if you're curling up while you're doing anything besides reading, you might want to look into Boniva. Anyway, what was I saying? Oh yeah, we lose focus, have no attention span, yada yada, blah blah blah. You know what? You can check out my Twitter page or go to my website for more information on this. Chapter 32. This is a tweet chapter. An observation in 140 characters. How come when you wipe up dust, it's called dusting, but when you wipe up a spill, it's not called spilling? Just something to think about. Chapter 33. The longest chapter. You might be able to tell from its name, but I just want to make it clear up front that this chapter is the longest chapter in this book. So if you're planning on listening to one more chapter before you go to bed or squeezing in one last chapter before you leave for dinner, this might not be the chapter for you to listen to right now because it's long. Very, very long. If you'd like, I could tell you really quickly what it's about and why it takes so long, and then you could decide whether or not you want to keep listening or if you want to come back to it later. Trust me, I will not be offended if you decide to come back to it. I'm not that easily offended. Maybe if you said, you know, you didn't like my shirt or my shoes or, you know, then my feelings would be a little hurt. But otherwise, I like to think I'm pretty tough. Plus, I'm the one giving you the option to either, you know, listen or skip it for now. So it wouldn't be weird. Like, hey, why didn't you want to keep listening instead of, you know, going to your doctor's appointment? My feelings are hurt, but I'm giving you the option. The reason this chapter is so long is because it's the most compelling chapter in the whole book. I am going to tell you about something that changed my life forever. That probably makes you want to keep listening. I don't mean to try and tempt you to stay. I would feel really awful if I made you late for a date with someone who could have been your future spouse were it not for your unattractive quality of being tardy. It's just that I know people want to hear compelling things about me that I've never shared before. When I first started writing this book, people kept asking me, what's in this book that I'm not going to hear anywhere else? Why should I listen to it? What's so special about it? And I would always answer the same way, why don't you just buy the audiobook because you love me, mother? But I understand what people are saying. I know I'm on TV every day talking about my life. You can read about me online and in magazines. I have that blog about flowers that has over 80 subscribers. Y'all know a lot about me, but you don't know everything, and that's what this chapter is about. And I certainly don't mean to make this chapter even longer by talking about how long it is. It almost feels like I'm making you wait and wait and wait, and I'm never going to get to my point, and I assure you that is not the case. But then again, maybe that's the lesson here. Maybe we all need to slow down and stop running from one place to another all the time. Maybe whatever you're about to do can wait. Sometimes waiting can be really good for you. As an example, it's always a good idea to wait at least a half hour after you've eaten before you go swimming. Some people say that's a myth, but I say better to be safe than sorry. I wait a half hour after eating before I go anywhere near water. That includes swimming, bathing, showering, even panning for gold. Obviously, there are some times when waiting isn't great. Waiting on hold on the phone can be annoying. Waiting for the results of an exam or on something like a pregnancy test can be very stressful, I would imagine. And what about how frustrating it is when you have to wait in line for the ladies' room? What takes so long in there, you guys? But at the same time, if you're waiting for something good, like a new movie to come out or for your family to leave town, there's a feeling of anticipation that can be very exciting. There's a suspense and drama as adrenaline starts to rush through your body like a rocket or like water that shoots down through those dirty water slides at theme parks. Right now, you're probably wild with anticipation. What is she going to say? What's her story? I can barely wait another second to hear something she's never told anyone. And by the way, thank you so much for waiting and listening to this chapter all the way through. I have to say, I would find it rude if you decided to skip ahead or turn the audiobook off after I explicitly stated that I was going to share something for the very first time that changed my life. It's not like it's the only thing I'm sharing in this audiobook that I've never told anyone. There's actually a lot in here that I've never shared before. I would say that nearly every single page has a new thought or a new idea or a new word that I've never before uttered. Here's one right now. Quaff. I've never said that word before. I've never even talked about it. This is the only place I will ever mention or discuss the word quaff. Here's another thing. I'm allergic to penicillin. Bet you didn't know that, did you? That's because I've never told anyone that. Not even a doctor. Here's another thing I've never talked about. I think it's weird that all dance classes have to be taught in front of a huge glass window. It's the only business that leaves nothing to the imagination. Why no curtains? Why do they want people walking by and staring at them? I have nothing against leotards, but that's a lot of bits and pieces for my eyes to see when I'm just trying to get to the coffee shop next door. Anyway, those are all things that I've never shared with anyone ever before, and as purchasers of this audiobook, I hope you feel special that you are the only ones to have this information. Those aren't even part of what I set out to share with you in this chapter. Those are just bonus ideas. What I really wanted to tell you is what seriously changed my life forever. I've never been the same since I first laid my eyes on it, and it's one of the best things that's ever happened to me. It's the Swiffer. You know what? That's it. I honestly thought it was going to take more time to explain how it changed my life, but I think you get it with that one word. I guess this chapter isn't the longest chapter after all. Chapter 34. Dinner with a Psychic. A friend of mine recently told me she went to a dinner party with a psychic. It really struck me as a fascinating concept. It's one thing to go to a psychic and have a consultation, but it seems like a whole other thing to socialize with one. Could he read her mind the whole time? Did he know when the party was going to get boring? Did he know when they were going to run out of bean dip? Here's how I imagine the conversation went at dinner between my friend and the psychic. In this dramatic interpretation, I will refer to my friend as Susie and the psychic as psychic. Susie. Hi, I'm Susie. Psychic. I know. Susie. How do you know Janet? Psychic. I knew you were going to ask me that. We met through mutual friends. How do you know Janet? Susie. We went... Psychic. Just kidding. I already know. Do you want me to pass the salad?
Susie, yes, please.
Psychic, I knew you did. Would you like more water?
Susie, no thanks.
Psychic, I knew you didn't.
Susie, well, it was really nice talking to you.
Psychic, you're gonna have spinach in your teeth later.
Susie, thanks.
Psychic, I knew you were gonna say that.
Chapter 35. Ideas. There's a famous quote, when genius strikes, one must be ready to play or they shall be at the mercy of the taskmaster. I don't know if you're familiar with it or not.